Some people like to deep clean every Saturday morning. I prefer to spend a few minutes every day keeping things fresh with Lysol. Lysol's toilet bowl cleaner disinfects both the toilet brush and bowl for 2-in-1 disinfection, killing 99.9% of viruses and bacteria. Don't just clean, Lysol clean.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/youknowbusiness.
Interstate Batteries offers a wide variety of batteries for your everyday needs. Stop into one of their thousands of retail locations and talk with a battery specialist about batteries for your truck, trail cameras, and even those weird batteries for your rangefinder. Interstate Batteries even offers cell phone repair in certain locations. For more information, visit interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
The Houndsman XP Podcast Network is taking you on the journey. Your host, Master Trainer Heath Hyatt, will combine his decades of experience as a houndsman and as a professional trainer that will light the path forward and make our packs lighter on this lifelong journey to become better hunters and houndsmen. There are no shortcuts, so lace up those boots and grab a dog leash. The journey begins now.
Hey guys, the journey on Houndsman XP is teamed up with Go Wild. Go Wild is a social media platform that was made for hunters by hunters. If you guys and gals have listened to any of the other podcasts that I've been on, you know what a huge outdoor enthusiast I am. I love being in the woods with my hounds. There's nothing more exciting than hearing the thunder of a spring gobbler. I love fishing for trout in the brooks and the streams, and I love being on the river chasing that ever-elusive fish of a thousand casts, the muskie. Go Wild is the place that I can post my trophies, hunts, and memories without being censored. But Go Wild is so much more than that. It's a place to share your stories, sharpen your skills, hone your tactics, get gear reviews, and shop for anything outdoors. When you make a purchase from the Go Wild store, everything is free shipping. Anything that you purchase anywhere in the country, no matter how big, free shipping. So go down to the show notes, click on the Go Wild link at the bottom, and get signed up today. And let's go wild. If y'all purchase anything from Go Wild, make sure that you're using the Houndsman XP promo code. And that code is going to be HXP10. So when you go in there and you download your cart, and you come up to the bottom and it says promo code, add Houndsman XP to it.
We are going to do a little bit of crossing over. While we was at the SHOT Show, I was very fortunate to meet a fine feller. We sat and talked for a long time, and come to find out, we have a lot of commonalities that we have in common together. He runs a podcast. We run a podcast, and we got to talking, and you know, it's so unique that like we have all these things in common, and we're just using a different, same platform, but different outlet. to reach people, to talk to people, to learn from people. So while we were at the SHOT Show, I was at the Bagheera CVA booth, was talking to them, and was introduced to Pete Rogers. And got to talking to Pete. Pete's from South Carolina. And got to talking about hunting, because that's what drives us all, whatever form or fashion it may be. And come to find out, Pete had a podcast, which is called The Christian Outdoors. And we got to talking, and we decided that we were going to support each other, which we would do anyway. And so Pete had me on his podcast, and I wanted him on our podcast for several reasons. And we'll talk about those throughout the next hour. But Pete, how's everything in South Carolina this morning?
And it's going very well, buddy. It really is, Heath. Can't complain at all, and if I did, nobody would listen. So just enjoy every day the best I can.
That sounds like my life. I could complain and nobody catches on. And we did.
Nobody cares.
That's right. And we did get together at the Great American Outdoor Show.
That's right.
You were up working with CVA, and I had to talk myself out. I mean, I wanted to buy so much stuff while I was up there, and I'm like, dude, you're broke. Like, you're broke. Just don't do it. So,
you know, and when you work the booth, as you probably know, you don't have a chance to walk the aisles.
No.
But when I was walking in every day, I would, you know, because we had to be there like an hour early to get, I would do a little quick in our area. And daggum, if I still didn't end up spending about $250 just on those little trips just around my immediate area. Yeah.
So I'm going on a rant before we get started.
Okay.
So, of course, I've been traveling quite a bit since the first of the year, driving a whole lot. So I drove up to Pennsylvania. I was in Richmond this week. What in the world is wrong with people? Driving in the left lane, 10 miles under the posted speed limit, like they don't have a care in the world. I'm like,
I got nothing on that, man.
Dude, you have got to get over. The left lane is a passing lane only. It's not to joyride on Sunday while you're looking at the scenery. And when you're on the internet, huh?
Or your phone while you're driving down the road,
too. Well, most of them are 10 and 2. They got those hands locked in. They are focused forward. And I mean, they are just putting along. And I mean, I got places to be, things to do, people to talk to. Like, I can't be hindered, if that's the word, yeah, by taking another hour and a half to get to my final destination. I'm like, Viper 6 is in your airspace. We need to move. Like, move it. Move over. We got to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, coming back from Pennsylvania, going up wasn't bad. I left really early. Traffic was light to medium. It got a little heavy once I, you know, started getting into Harrisburg. But it wasn't bad. But, you know, coming home from Richmond the other night at 10 o'clock at night, and there was these two tractor trailers racing up a hill at 40 miles an hour. And there was a line of I think I counted 21 cars behind the left lane. And guys, you know, mad respect for you guys hauling stuff all over the country, but I just don't get it. Like, I just don't get it. Like, you know you can't pass that truck. Or if you're a car, you know that you're not doing the speed limit or under the speed limit. Just get over. That's it. Just get over. You're not in a hurry, obviously, so why would you need to pass somebody?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's my rant for the day. Like, I was fit to be tied. I have
got there, but you got home safe.
I did. Yeah, very slowly. I got home very safe and slowly.
Well, somebody's
got
to be the caboose, man. Somebody has to be the caboose.
Oh,
right?
Man. Yeah. I just don't get it. I don't know the thought process. And I probably get wound up too tight sometimes.
I did hear one guy say who was a left lane driver, and I tend to be a left lane driver, but I don't drive below the speed limit. And I'm not for any police officers out there. I don't want them to think that I'm a speed demon. All right. But he said he drives the left lane because the right lane is more bumpy than the left lane. Left lane's smoother.
Well, in some cases.
More people riding. And in a lot of cases, I thought, well, that makes sense. You know, the mm-hmm. right lane is because that's where most people are supposed to drive. It is a little bit more worn out. Left lane's smoother, so he rides in the left lane.
Yeah. It does make sense. And in some circumstances, I know that's probably a fact because the right lane does get traveled more. But come on.
If you see people coming up behind you, move over.
Yeah, that's it. That's what the rear view mirrors are for.
Let them by, and then if you want to cruise in left lane, as long as nobody's behind you, just cruise over there.
That's right. All right, enough on my rant for this morning. I just had to let that out. I could feel the I was getting frustrated. I needed to let that out. So yeah, I'm good now.
We're good.
All right. Good. Pete, well, tell the listeners, like I said, you and I have talked several times and been around each other a little bit now. Tell us about you. Tell us about your writing, your podcast, what you do. Then we'll get into the hunting part.
Okay. All right. Well, first of all, Heath, thank you for having me on the show. I'm really honored to be a guest on your show, and I hope your ratings don't tank after this. But
man,
a lot of people,
I'm paying them to download now. What are you saying?
That's funny. And a lot of people, when I go speak at events and stuff, Heath, one of the main questions I get is, how'd you get into outdoor writing? How did you get into it? Because it's a lot of people are fascinated by writing for hunting and fishing magazines. And you know, as you said, I've been doing that since 1998, 99, somewhere there. I sold my first story. And I was in my 40s when I did that, or late 30s, rather. I was in my late 30s. So I didn't, like, come out of school with the desire to be an outdoor writer. The way it came about was I've always written. And the reason I've written is because I'm going to back up a little bit, jump around a little bit, and then come to it. But real briefly is growing up, I had a severe speech impediment, like severe. I could not speak out loud at all. And some people call it a stutter or a stammer, but it was very debilitating, and a lot of bullying, a lot of picking and teasing on, you know, because here's Pete who can't speak. And when I tell that to people, they're like, well, what do you mean? I know people that stutter. I was like, yeah, I do too, but I haven't found anyone who stuttered as badly as I did, because I literally could barely speak. I could not read out loud. I could read, but I couldn't read out loud at all. And I went to a lot of speech therapists. It was so bad, Heath, when I played football in high school, I was quarterback, but I couldn't call the plays in the huddle because I couldn't speak. And, you know, if you played football in high school or anybody who's listening did, you realize that on the field, the game is a lot faster than it looks like in the stands. Right? The clock's ticking. You just got finished the play. You run back to the huddle. You got to call the next play and then go. But I couldn't call the play. So the coach would send in a player every down, and he would call the play in the huddle for me so that we didn't get delayed game because Pete's trying to get out 42 dive on left, and it takes a minute and a half to get that to happen. So because of that, I expressed myself by writing from as long as I can remember. I've even found old books or notebooks that I've written in stuff when I was trying to express myself because I couldn't speak. Went through a lot of therapists, obviously, because here I am now. But and one identified what my main problems were, and I won't bore the listeners with that. But we was in some techniques that she taught me, enabled me to be able to handle it, so that most people won't even notice it unless I point it out. And it's just some tricks and tactics and techniques. If anybody is out there struggles with it, then I'd be glad to talk with them about it and tell you what I do to see if it works for you. One thing I have learned, though, is what works for me may not work for you if you have a speech issue as well. But anyway, so I've always written. So I had just gotten back from a moose hunting trip in Alaska, and I wrote a story about the trip, and I sent it to the buddies that I went with, Heath, and they were, you know, very complimentary and very nice. But one of them, who's one of my dearest friends I ever had in my whole life, he's passed away now, but his name's Walter. He was 25 years my senior, and he's like, Pete, this is really good. You really ought to consider getting this stuff published. Send me some more of your stuff. So I sent him some more of my stories, and he was, again, he just an old welder from Portland, Oregon. And so it's not like he was an editor or in the writing business, but he was just very supportive. And I was like, well, you know, I always had approached Heath that if you get a yes and figure out the rest, right? So if somebody else can do it, I might can too. So why not try? There's a few things I wouldn't do that with, like flying an airplane right now, or just because they can doesn't mean I want to try, right?
Right, yeah, yeah.
So I started sending in stories. This is way back in the dark ages when we actually had this this envelope for the generation, whatever letter we're on now, who don't know what envelopes are, but we'd write the story, fold it, put an envelope, put a stamp on it, mail it, wait 6 weeks for a no. Do that over and over and over again. I don't know whether I'm bullheaded or persistent, but I finally got a yes. And sold my first story to the Rough Grouse Society, of all people. It was a story on hunting woodcock, and the Rough Grouse Society bought it. It was called Hooked by Happenstance. I'll never forget the title of it. It worked really well. And they actually paid me $400. And I was like, oh, my gosh. That's so cool. I got paid for that. That was just awesome. And it was a year and a half before I sold another one. But I was starting to learn how the process works. And so as time has gone on now, here it is 24 years later, I've been fortunate enough to be published in some of the biggest magazines in the country, the NRA publications, Northwestern American Rifleman, American Hunter. I've been in those, Bow Hunting World, a lot of the regional magazines, the Sportsman's magazines, Carolina Sportsman, South Carolina Game and Fish, back when Game and Fish was in the States. I did multiple states of Game and Fish publications. Fur Fish and Game is one of my favorites because I'm a trapper by trade, and so I get to write trapping stories for them. I do, at my peak, I was doing about 140 stories a year.
Nice.
I've backed off of that because of the podcast that we'll get to in a little bit. I've also been able to publish 6 books, 5 on the outdoors and 1 Christian book that we'll get to later. And 2 of them have won Outdoor Book of the Year. My first one, called Times Well Spent, which is being redone now and hopes to come out later this year. In 2012, it was Outdoor Book of the Year. And in 2019, the Southeastern Outdoor Press Association named my turkey hunting book called So You Want to Hunt Turkeys as the 2019 Outdoor Book of the Year. So that was a big honor. I'm a member of many different writing organizations, have won over 60-something awards in writing and photography. And, you know, very humbled by that your peers recognize you and say, hey, you know, this guy can form words in a way. But I got great editors, dude. That's really what it's about. I got great editors that make me look good. And I'm very thankful for them, and I make sure that they know that. Lisa Greenway, a girl from my Sunday school class, I say girl, she's a lady from my Sunday school class, has been editing my stuff for years. I get it at least a 5 before I send it in to the magazine editors so that it's grammatically perfect. And she's done all my books for me. And but yeah, that's how I got in the outdoor writing world. And it's funny though, when you become an outdoor writer, like for me, I love to fish, I love to hunt, I love to trap. But editors kind of put you in a cubby and say, all right, Pete's the archery guy, or Pete's the handgun hunting guy, or Pete's the turkey guy. And I think, well, I really enjoy saltwater fishing and striper fishing probably more than any of that, but I don't get any stories on those because they have me plugged as the guy who writes about the hunting. But I love hunting. I've been fortunate to hunt in 17 different states. I always go unguided on public land, do a DIY kind of thing. Heath, do it myself, figure out what I haven't chased yet, and I want to go figure out how to chase it. And so that's what I do. So that's a real brief. Actually, it probably wasn't very brief at all. It was about 8 or 9 minutes.
Speaking of which, I am so disappointed that I'm not at the National Turkey Wild Turkey Federation this weekend in Nashville. Like, I'm watching it being posted all over the place, and I'm like, I just don't have time. I could not get out there to this one. And that's something I wanted to go to.
The turkey show is one of the best shows in the country. It is, but it always falls on my wife's birthday weekend. My wife's birthday was yesterday, and I was like, honey, do you want to go to Nashville for your birthday? She's like, no, I don't care anything at all about turkeys. She's a great woman, but she doesn't care anything at all about the outdoors. Nothing.
Yeah.
Not at all. So we're polar opposites in that regard. And I even booked a hotel room and said we can go have, you know, just a weekend together. And just, I need to go to the show for a few hours every day. So like, nah, no. Here I am.
Yeah. And another thing that's so funny that, and you talk about your love for striper fishing and what was the other?
Saltwater fishing.
Saltwater. Like, you know, dogs are my life. And, you know, that's what consumes a lot of my time, but I love to fish too. I love to musky fish, and everybody kind of knows that. And I'm not good at it, trust me. Man, I catch if I catch 6 or 8 in a year, man, I'm on cloud nine. But I bass fish, and I love to trout fish. I love to fish.
I've never caught a musky. I've been to Canada a few times fishing for northern pike and walleye, and love that experience. Uh-huh. I mean, that, you know, they fly you in and drop you off on this remote lake, and you got the whole lake to yourself. That is a phenomenal experience if you get to do that. I got addicted to northern pike.
Oh, yeah.
So aggressive. Yep. And so they're not difficult to catch, and I like stupid fish and stupid turkeys. You know, I'll tell anybody in the world, I love killing stupid turkeys because it's hard to kill. It's even hard to kill a stupid one.
Yeah.
But it's really hard to kill a grown one.
Yeah.
I enjoy everything. Yep. I really do.
Yeah. And that kind of I mean, I don't know if a lot of people know that, but like I spend a lot of time on the water, in it or on it. I mean, in the off season, you know, if I can get a couple hours, sometimes I spend days, but you got to come on. I mean, come on up and let's go musky fishing.
I didn't know there were musky in Virginia.
New River is like one of the, it's a world-class fishery for musky.
It's a date. All right. We'll do that this summer. It's summertime. Is that when it's
well, best or what? Yeah. So I don't like to fish for them after the water temperature gets above 78. It puts too much stress on them. So most of your diehard musky fishers will not go target at them after that water temperature. But yeah, May and June is good. They'll come out of the spawn, 1st of May. We don't target them during the spawn either. So we'll bass fish then. But
that's
yeah.
still turkey season. So
that's right. As soon as turkey season's over, man, I'm back at it.
Yeah,
so.
Turkey season dominant. I mean, I'm so addicted. And people ask me all the time, "What's your favorite thing to hunt?" And before they finish their question, I'm screaming turkeys. Turkey. I'm gobbling at them. That's what it is. It's all about the turkeys for me. I love chasing turkeys.
Yeah,
I do.
I'm with you. That was probably one of my earliest passions. I bow hunted. I was an avid bow hunter. And then when I got my dogs and started hunting, I could not balance hunting at night because I was competition coon hunting and running the Purina circuit at that time. I couldn't hunt all night and get up and bow hunt. So I'm a morning hunter. I like to hunt in the morning better. I will hunt evenings, but don't get me wrong.
Me too.
I'm a morning person, man. I like to see the sun come up, the world come alive. That's just the best part of the day for me. And I like that. So it kind of clashed, and I kind of went away from the bow hunting. But I always turkey hunted. I've loved it since I was a young – I mean, I can't tell you what age. And I probably went 5, 6, 7 years before I ever killed one of them stinking things, like in spring. Now, fall,
tough, yeah.
Fall was different, but – yeah, spring.
We don't have fall season anymore here in South Carolina. I killed my first turkey in 1978. You weren't even born yet, I'm
yes,
sure.
I was.
Oh, come on now.
Yeah.
Come on now.
I'm a 73 barely. Model, man. I'm okay. old.
All right. Well, I'm 10 years older than you then. We're good. I'm a 63. But I killed my first one in 1978 in Edgefield, South Carolina, public land, you know, and Lynch's World Champion double-sided box call.
Got it.
Still have it. Paid
$14.95. Yep.
Paid $14.95. I still have it. Still use it. People ask me all the time, why are you using that classic call? I say, because it still kills turkeys.
Yep.
As long as it'll keep fooling them, I'm going to carry it. Now, if the day ever comes that it breaks, I'm literally going to weep.
Yeah.
I'm going to, like, I mean, tears will, because that has killed, I don't even know how many turkeys have been lured in by my Lynch's World Champion double-sided box call.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a friction call guy because of my speech impediment, Heath. My mouth is shaped in such a way that I can't hardly blow a diaphragm at all.
Interesting.
So, you know, I'll do some throat, some natural voice stuff when they're close. Just a cluck
purr.
Or a purr real quick, you know, when you're already on the gun and you can't. But pot calls and box calls is my go-to.
Yeah. All right, so let's flip over. What got you started in your podcast? And you went from your writing – and then what brought you into the podcast world?
Okay, well, I don't even remember what year it was, but I went to a POMA conference, a Professional Outdoor Media Association conference in Shreveport, Louisiana, where I was receiving an award. So I went there, and they had a seminar on podcasts. And I was like, well, I got to kill some time. Let me step in here. I had no idea what they were. All right. No clue. And they were doing a seminar on it. And I thought, wow, that sounds really intriguing, where you can just talk about whatever you want to talk about. So for people who don't know, a podcast, the way I describe it, Heath, is talk radio over the internet.
Yeah.
Right. And because of that, you don't have these FCC rules that you have to abide by. You don't have time slots. I've guest hosted outdoor radio programs and been a guest on many of them and so forth. And, you know, for anybody in radio, you got like a 12-minute window, then a commercial, and you got an 8-minute window, then a commercial, and then another 8-minute window, and it's over for a 30-minute show.
Mm-hmm.
So, but podcasts, as you know, you can talk about any subject for as long as you want to or for as brief as you want to.
Yep.
And being an ordained minister, I was like, man, I would love to talk about the things I'm most passionate about. I'm passionate about hunting and fishing, the outdoors, and I'm passionate about my relationship with Christ. Can I combine those into one show? So being a little bit type A personality, I researched this for over a year and a half. And I listened to, I'm going to say, hundreds and hundreds of podcasts on how to do a podcast. I researched equipment. I researched the right microphones. This is my third set of microphones, by the way. I researched sound equipment. This is my third set of sound equipment, you know. I researched content and how to do it and how to get guests. And I just had all this stuff down. And I said, well, one of the things that I read was, if you're going to commit to it, the main thing that your customers or listeners want is consistency, good content on a regular basis. And as you know, some podcasts are once a month, some are three times a month, some are four times a month. Some guys do it twice a week. They obviously don't have other jobs. And there's a few guys who do daily shows. Now, they're short, they're 15 yep. minutes, but still, as you know, the prep time that goes into a show, a one-hour recording for Pete is about 4 hours of prep and another 2 hours of editing later.
Yep.
Right? So that's 7 hours per week. In the beginning, it was more because you get faster as you go. But I committed to, in 2019, October 1st of 2019, I launched a Christian Outdoors podcast. We own ChristianOutdoors.org and most any other combination of that available, .info.us, whatever it's called, everything but .com. Somebody owns that, and they haven't operated it in 15 years, and they don't want to sell it. So we're ChristianOutdoors.org, and our tagline is, we talk about everything outdoors and how to enjoy God every day. And that last part is something I really want to talk about whenever we have a chance. But so I do weekly shows. Every Monday, a new episode comes out. I do 50 a year, allow myself a couple of breaks.
Mm-hmm.
I just recorded yesterday episode 169. And we are found on every podcast platform out there that you can think of, from Apple Podcasts, of course, and Google Play, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and now we're on Carbon TV as well on their podcast platform. So it looks like, Heath, if God continues to do what he's doing, and once all the numbers come in, sometime in March, we're going to hit 1 million subscribers.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very nice. And you know what? That's one thing I've said on our podcast a couple times. Like, I'm a learner. Like, I want to learn. I think knowledge is power. And I sometimes can't get enough, you know, like I want to know. Especially if it's something I'm interested in or passionate about, like I'm like you, I will sit down and listen to 50 podcasts about it to learn. And I've always said that a podcast is free learning.
Yeah,
free.
Well,
it's free.
Said. Well said.
You go on there. You can pick out what you like, the stuff that you want to know about, and I don't have to read, and I do read. I'm an avid reader, but I can, in my car at work, like, when people walk up to my car, if I'm sitting in a parking lot or something, my guys that I work with, they're like, you're listening to a podcast. Well, yeah. I mean, I'm 12 hours in my car, and
yeah.
It's nothing for me to listen to 3 or 4, maybe 5 in a day, you know, yep. In between calls or you know, I'll be sitting and I'll be approving reports or whatever, and I'm listening. Like, you know, I'm taking that stuff in, and it's just a free platform to get any knowledge, information that you want or need on any subject.
The Journey on Houndsman XP has teamed up with OneTDC. This dual-action support for oral health and mobility in our dogs. This unique supplement is so effective that it is recommended by top veterinarian experts worldwide to maintain and improve our dogs' health in four different areas. Their oral health, hips, joints, and muscles, skin, coat, energy, and recovery. Guys, I've been using this product for the last 6 months, and it has been a game changer for me. If you're looking for something to help with the overall health of your dog, go to worksowell.com and give this product a try. It is highly recommended by Houndsman XP here on The Journey.
Virtually any subject out there, it really is.
Yep.
And like you, I do a lot of traveling in my truck. And I used to, and I still do from time to time, listen to, they used to be books on tape, but now they're digital, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I can't think of what
audio books.
Yeah. Thank you. And I have them. I couldn't even think of what it's called. So I will, if I'm doing a, you know, a 30 hour drive and I'm getting tired of podcasts, I'll throw in an audio book and listen to it. But for me, listening to podcasts makes the miles just fly by.
It does.
I mean, and you realize, golly, I've been listening to three podcasts, and I'm 5 hours down the road here. And it didn't feel like it because you're so engaged into what you're listening to. And I find that to be very beneficial and advantageous. I do. And I'm like you. I mean, I work for the USDA is my real job, right? I'm a trapper here in Greenville, South Carolina for the USDA. I'm in my truck by myself all the time. So there's a podcast playing almost constantly.
Yep.
Not just mine. I do listen to mine to see if I missed something in my editing, but I'm listening to critique it. I'm not listening for the knowledge or the entertaining. I'm like, God, I should have cut that out. Ooh, I should, you know,
yeah.
I missed
or I should
that
have
part,
asked but, this, and I'm, I, yeah, I yeah, missed yeah. it. Yeah, I'm with you, 100%. Yeah.
But I listen to a lot of other guys as well. And I listen to Christian podcasts and outdoor podcasts. That's pretty much the ones that I do, that I listen to. It's a great platform. It has enabled me to meet some wonderful people like yourself. And it's enabled me to get to talk to people that I've known but never had a chance to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to name drop here. If you go look at all my episodes, you'll see some of the biggest names in the industry that I've been able to interview who I've known for years through being an outdoor writer. You just get exposed to, you know, you get to go to SHOT Show, you get to go to ATA, you get, and you're meeting all these people. And I've been doing it for 24 years now. So I know all the big names that you see on television, you know, I've had relationships with, but I never had a chance to just sit down and pick their brains about specific subjects. And that's one of the things I love the most about being the host of the podcast is picking the brains of my guests and saying, how would you do this? What do you think about that? Well, you know, those type of questions. So, yeah, like when I had you on the show, I don't know a whole lot about dog hunting. Why don't you educate me and teach me about it? How do you train? How do you select your breeds? All those things to me are intriguing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we'll get you up and get you underneath one of those.
Oh, I'd like to do that. I do. I want to do that. I can't believe that you can teach standard poodles to run bears, though. That's just amazing.
Hey, I'm working on a Chihuahua right now.
Are you really?
Yeah. It's gonna
not
be
fast
like
enough, though.
It's gonna be like a mad hornet running around that bear. But you know, you was talking about Steve Harvey has a quote. And Steve Harvey says that networking will get you places that a degree never will.
Absolutely.
And I'm like you. Just this year, since January, the people that I've met, some relationships that I have been introduced to and started to form is humbling.
Yeah.
For me.
It is.
You know, you like you said, you hear about these people, you read about them, you've read their stuff, you've watched them, and then all of a sudden you're standing there actually talking to them, and then you walk by them at another show or something, and they know your name.
Yeah.
And it's like, holy
cow. You're a little starstruck at first.
Yeah.
I mean, you are. At least I was in the beginning. I just said, like, oh, my gosh, there's Ralph and Vicky Sansrillo. They're my favorite people. And I met them. And I said, now, and I just sit there staring, just wide-eyed, staring. Oh, my gosh, he's right there in front of me. Oh.
Yeah.
And can I tell this story real
quick? Absolutely. This is about you.
Yeah, because they're some of my favorite people. We've built a good relationship. The first time I met Ralph and Vicky at the ATA show, I'm literally standing there at the Hoyt booth, and I just, and my eyes are just big as saucers, and I'm just staring there. And I didn't realize how long I'd been there. And finally, Ralph turns and says, "Can I help you?" I was like, "Oh, he's talking to me." And you know, I did the very corny, "Hi, Ralph. I'm Pete. I'm, you know, big fan. Blah blah blah." He's like, "Well, thank you." And he, I could see he was saying, "Quit staring at me." He didn't say that, but
go away.
Yeah, go away, you freak. You know, but we hit it off right off the bat, and I've been very blessed to hunt with them and to be on their television show and to build a good relationship. They're some of my favorite people in the whole world, and I'm gonna toot their horn real quick. They are exactly in person as they look like on TV. Mm-hmm. There's nothing pretentious. They're as real as long, and I will always be their number one fan. They're just great, great people. But as you said, the first time you meet these people, you're just, I was starstruck, and then you realize they're just regular folks,
mm-hmm.
for the most part.
Yep.
For the most part. And there's always a few out there that you're not sure about. But.
And I think being authentic, I think the authentic people that are real, there's no fake, no put on, those are the one that people seem to draw to more.
Right.
Because you can't be two.
That's right.
You can't That's be right. two. So, right. yeah. No, yeah. I'm with you there.
Be yourself and be yourself all the time.
That's right. I mean, what you see is what you get, and it's not much, but here it is.
Exactly. I'm sure I'm going to I don't think they've said it to my face, but when people finally come up and meet you, you know, and it's like I'm thinking, I hope I didn't disappoint them.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I'm thinking. When people, I had a guy up in Harrisburg. It really caught me off guard. This doesn't happen a whole lot to me because I'm a podcaster, so my face isn't out there a whole lot. My voice is, but my face isn't. And this gentleman walks up and says, "Are you Pete, the guy that hosts Christian Outdoors podcast?" I'm like, "Yeah, I am." And anyway, and he started talking. It caught me so off guard, you know, that, again, my face isn't really out there. It's my mm-hmm. voice that's out there. And that's one of the few times that that's happened. And when he left, I thought to myself, I hope I didn't disappoint him and left. And he left hoping his day was better or making his day better. I really, really want my listeners to benefit from everything that we're doing. That's why I do it, is to try to impact people in a positive way.
Yeah. And on those lines, I feel like he probably was just as happy for you acknowledging him, talking to him, and giving him a couple minutes of your time. And I think that's something that you and I both have in common, is each listener is important to us, you know.
Absolutely.
Like the three that I have, you know, I'm paying them. And anybody else that wants to jump on board, I mean,
am I going to be on the payroll in the future? I'll send you an invoice.
You working for pennies? Working for pennies? They're important, and you know, I don't think nothing about giving them my time. You know, that's the only thing I can give them is my time.
Absolutely, and it's something that I wish I could remember who told me this years ago, but it was an elder gentleman, you know, offering advice. He said, "Well, wherever you are, be there fully."
Yep.
And I thought, if somebody comes up to me and wants to talk to me, I'll need to give them my 100% undivided attention.
Yep.
I'm not going to be looking. I'm not going to be one of those who looks somewhere else and talks to you or on my phone while you're talking to me. If you want to talk to Pete, I'm going to give you my undivided attention for as long as you want to stand there and talk. Because I learned this in ministry, and I've learned it in my outdoor career as well, is that a lot of times when people approach you and start a conversation, that's not what they want to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
They're just breaking the ice and getting comfortable. And if you can make them comfortable, then they can share what they really want to talk about. And I want to be able to do that for as long as it takes. If they need to stand there and talk for 45 minutes, I'll stand there and talk to them 45 minutes. If they just want to shake my hand and get a picture, we'll do that too.
Yeah.
You know, whatever it is that individual wants, they got my undivided attention the whole time.
Yeah.
And that's why when I go speak at events, you know, I do a lot of wild game banquets and sportsmen's banquets and men's conferences and things like that. I make sure I'm there at least a couple hours early in case people want to talk or, you know, ask questions. And I stay as long afterwards until they lock the doors, just in case people want to talk about things and ask questions. I think being available is important.
Yes. So that segues into, you know, the next thing I want to talk to, like, you and I, like, I really wanted to bring you on for this is, you know, you pastor at different churches, you travel, you speak at different groups, and you and I had kind of touched base with this up in Pennsylvania, about leadership and mentorship and growing as a person within the hunting community, how we can work together, because we're all, you know, I see stuff on social media and I just shake my head that, and I hate this, but some people are just so one-track mind. You know, it takes all kinds to make the world go round. And just because I'm not, and I'm just going to throw a deer hunter. I do deer hunt. Yes, we deer hunt for food. That's it. I don't trophy hunt. If one walks out in front of me, hallelujah, I'll take him. But we do it to fill the freezer. But we have to be together. We're in this together. We're in the, and I want to say the fight, but we are. Because a lot of our sports, especially in the hound community, is on the verge or the brink. And it's not, you know, like this second, but it's a dying sport. You know, our youth, which we are very passionate about taking hunting and getting outdoors. And, you know, I can go back to my childhood and say confidently that me being raised where I was at, there was nothing to do. I was either in the woods or I lived on a creek. Like I could walk off my property across the main road into the creek, like 150 yards from my front door. And if it wasn't for that, I don't know where my life would be. Like, I don't know what trouble I would have. It kept me out of trouble is what I'm saying. Like I had the passion to be in the woods. That's where I wanted to be. That's where I wanted to spend my time. As I went through high school phase, you know, everybody goes through stuff. And, like, that was kind of my escape. I didn't go out and party and drink and carry on. That just wasn't who I was. And it shaped me a lot for who I am now. And you and I had talked about that a little bit. And I want to talk about it. I want to talk about your perspective and how we as hunters of all species that we pursue can be more of a unity togetherness than bickering with each other about X, Y, and Z.
Well, that's a big topic. We could do the whole show on just that. And we could have a 2 or 3 hour episode. But it's something that I've cared deeply about. And there's a lot of parallels there. Excuse me, Heath. There's a lot of parallels to a lot of different areas. But as one person said one time, hunters are the most cannibalistic people out there. And what I mean by that when I say it is, and we hear this a lot, is bow hunters don't like crossbow hunters. And rifle hunters don't like bow hunters. And bow hunters don't like shotgun hunters. And stand hunters don't like dog runners. And deer hunters can't stand coon hunters running at night on their property. And there's just all this infighting among themselves. And it becomes an elitist thing. Excuse me. You hear a lot where there's a friend of mine, right? And he's like, I'm a bow hunter. Anybody can kill him with a rifle. Only to hunt him with a bow. I'm like, well, good for you, right? Pete, I'm an equal opportunity killer. It's in season, and then I'm going to take it. I mean, I hunt with every legal weapon. And one of my goals, I haven't done it yet, and I keep saying I'm going to do it every year, but I haven't, is I want to kill, here in South Carolina, I can kill 4 bucks and 8 does in a year, right? I want to kill a deer in the same season with every legal weapon. You know, that would be for us across a vertical bow, a crossbow, muzzleloader, rifle, pistol, shotgun.
Oh, wow.
Right, so I want to do that in the same season. I've done it, but I haven't done it in the same season. And that's a goal. You know, buck or doe, I don't care which one. But you got to commit to one of them until you get that one off the list, right? I've done 3 of the 5, and I've done 4 of the 5 before, or 6. There's 6 now since I had a crossbow to it. But I haven't done all of them in the same season. So I think I'm going to make a commitment 1 year and just go and just first one comes out, boom, dead, go get another weapon. That evening change weapons or whatever you have to do. But I'm all about that. as Ralph taught me, if it's legal in your state, country, or province, and you want to do it, go do it. I fully support that. As we talked about when I was on, when you were on my show, I've never had an opportunity to hound hunt for bear, but it's legal. I would absolutely go do it if I had an opportunity, because how can I condemn something I know nothing about?
Mm-hmm.
You know, a guest on my show who's actually a baseball coach at University of South Carolina said one time, he said, it's not complain about, but we criticize. We criticize things we don't understand.
It's easy.
And I thought, wow, what a great statement. We criticize things we don't understand. And I don't understand running deer with dogs. I mean, I understand the process, but I don't understand the addiction, right? Mm-hmm. But I don't have dogs. I understand it's all about the dogs, mm-hmm. not about the killing the deer. I understand that in the low country of South Carolina, where the palmettos are chest high, that you're not going to see deer if you try to stand hunt.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to push them out of those thick swamps in order to get them. It's the same limits apply, the same rules apply. They're just using the dogs to push it by. I've tried that once. It wasn't a great experience because I didn't see a whole lot, right? But I just sat there and heard dogs barking and slapped mosquitoes for hours. But that doesn't mean that it was it's like I've been on bad dates too, right?
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't mean I quit dating.
Right.
You know? So I'm not going to condemn anybody who wants to hunt any species as long as it's legal in their state, country, or province. There's a lot, and I've said this before too, I don't understand single species hunters. I don't understand these guys who say, I only hunt deer. I only hunt big deer in the Midwest. That's all. Man, what are you missing? Man, you are missing so much if you only hunt deer and you're condemning somebody who wants to chase turkeys, or you're condemning somebody who goes out west and hunts mule deer, or I only hunt elk. Well, that's a short season and you're missing a whole lot of the year because there's so many other things.
Uh-huh.
I'm trying to think right now. I have not bear hunted, okay? Mm-hmm. And I haven't snow goose hunted. There's several waterfowl species that I haven't hunted yet. And I'm going for antelope this fall, antelope mule deer this fall in Wyoming. If I draw my tag, fingers crossed. I got 7 points, Wyoming. If you're listening, draw my number, please. Draw my number, please. Other than some of the really outlandish species, most of the ones that are available to the average hunter, I have gone after, and I love every bit of it. I love chasing grouse in Wisconsin and woodcock there and at home. I love bobwhite quail hunting. I love hearing beagles chase rabbits. I really enjoy that. And I just wish hunters would support one another. Just because it may not be for you doesn't mean that it's wrong. Right. There's a saying, Heath, that says just because it's different doesn't mean it's wrong. Right. Now, there are some things that are just wrong.
Mm-hmm.
OK. And we don't want to open that can of worms. Obviously, in the hunting world, that would be,
yeah,
you know, poaching or baiting illegal, hunting at night, mm-hmm. All these kind of things. But or shooting animals out of season or without tags and all that kind of stuff, which we hear happens go all the time. But you may not enjoy it, but that doesn't mean that the guy who does or gal that does enjoy it is doing something this wrong or unethical.
Right.
You know, I'm 59 years old. I get cortisone shots in both shoulders twice a year. I still hunt with my bow, and long bow, compound bow. I have a crossbow. I've never killed anything with it. But if it will get me out there, why do I care what you use? If it will get you out there so you can enjoy nature and enjoy the lifestyle that we call hunting, why do you care what somebody uses?
Yeah. And what I've heard from what you just said is, I'm sitting here thinking, like, it's the love for the outdoors. It doesn't matter what you're doing.
Right.
And, you know, I think about opportunities. Like, where I'm at, I have a lot of different opportunities. You know, I can deer hunt. You know, I can bear hunt. I can, you know, squirrel hunt, deer, turkey hunt, bobcat. I can do a lot of different things if I choose to. Mm-hmm. Bear hunting consumes a lot of my time because of the dogs, the dog training. And, you know, that's what people don't see is the amount of time that goes into the dogs itself. Not the hunting part. It's the upkeep, the maintenance, getting those dogs trained to be able to to track, trail, tree, catch, bay, those that game. So my deer hunting is limited. Like I said, I hunt for food. Now turkey hunting is a little different. I spend a little more time with that because that's something that I'm passionate. I love it. Like I love it. Which leads me to that next conversation we had, and we didn't finish it because we wanted to save it for this, is you had listened or seen a video or listened to somebody talk about how we, when we have a conflict with another hunter. Like, so for bear hunters, a lot of times when the muzzle loading season's in, deer season's usually out the first 2 weeks of bear season, of kill season, of where you can harvest. And then late muzzleloading season come in, and I have been subject to several bear being killed in front of my dogs, with people that were not with me, not hunting with me, had nothing to do with me or my hounds. In fact, I'll tell a quick story, and like I said, I'm not going to put names out there, but back when we had the old telemetry, not the GPSs. But the telemeter, the beep beeps. Our dogs had crossed out of a section, crossed an old road, and went into a big section of timber forest. And it took us a while to find them. And we finally got up on this high point. We could hear the dogs treed, but it was a lot of little rolling ridges in there. So it took us a while to get to them. And they were every time we top up on a knoll, we could hear them treed. And then we go through the hollows and the valleys and pop back up. Well, as we got closer, the treeing was less and less. And now, this is hours. This is not 10, 15, 20, 30 minutes. This was a couple of hours doing this, of finding them to start with, locating them, actually pinpointing where they were at, and then trying to get to them. Well, when we got in there, the dogs had shut up. We're like, what? Like, you know, what's going on here? So we were tracking. And the dogs were up, going up a holler away from us. They're not barking. And we're like, what, you know, what is going on here? Well, as we, and it's, there's snow on too, okay? So when we got into the holler where they were at, we found the tree that they retreat in. And at the bottom of the tree, there's a big pool of blood. And then we see drag marks. And we see the dog prints following the drag marks. So we know what's happened. Somebody shot a bear and is dragging it out, and the three or four dogs that we had at that time were following it out. So we start hoofing it up behind those drag marks. And up the holler, over the next ridge, into the next holler, we end up catching up with the individuals that done this. And when we topped up, they were taking sticks and whipping our dogs away from the bear. And I will tell you, that was not a good encounter.
I can only imagine.
It was not.
You don't whip my dogs, number one.
Yes. So that's something that most bear hunters are. We wouldn't have cared who killed it if they'd have just waited till we got there and let us tie our dogs back, which didn't happen either. And when you shoot a bear out of the tree, there's always that chance that that bear will fall on the dogs if they're not out of the way. And then you know, you kill a $5,000 dog, like, that's irreplaceable. But anyway, you and I had talked about that a little bit. What are some experiences or some advice, or what are some things we can do that we don't have that interaction?
Well, I think if you hunt public ground, it's inevitable that you're going to have an interaction. It's, you know, we all have stories who hunt public ground, and I hunt a lot of public ground. I also have private land that I hunt here at home. But when I travel, I hunt public land. And, you know, there's been many times I'm working a turkey, and then all of a sudden you hear somebody who's a really bad caller kind of get between you and the turkey, and they start calling, or they start, you know, hooting at it or whatever, trying to get between you and the turkey. And there's, in my, and I am not, I want to preface this, I am not an expert on confrontation of other hunters, because here's a couple of things that I've learned about that is, first of all, they're armed. You know that, right? And if they're going to do that, if they're going to cut you off or go kill your animal in front of you, then you already know that, that they're not very polite, courteous kind of person. So do you want a confrontation? Is it worth getting into a gunfight over a turkey or a deer or a bear? That's the first thing you have to ask yourself. And only you can answer that question, right? for me, the answer is always going to be no. There's always another turkey, there's always another deer, there's always another bear. I'm not going to get into a gunfight with some jerk who decided to cut me off and kill my animal or do that. There's some basic etiquette that I was actually talking to my son about this recently. There's some basic etiquette that I think needs to happen, and that is this. If you are hunting public land and there's like a general parking area, you know, and like me, I hunt a lot of forest land, right? You can't block the gates, but you mm-hmm. can park beside the gate. You know, first, you know, it's first come, first served. If I go to my number one spot and there's already a truck there, I'm going to keep driving and go somewhere because I don't know where he's sitting.
That's right.
Especially in turkey season because there's no orange. You're sitting on the ground, and I don't want to get shot or shoot somebody accidentally. So I'm going to go. That's why I have 8 or 10 spots. That's why I scout a bunch of different locations. When I go to the next spot, if there's a truck there, I keep on going. And I expect the same courtesy that if I get there first – and my truck's there, and I'll go ahead and head in early. I don't expect to ride at daylight, and it happens every year, 2 or 3 times. Right at daylight, here comes somebody whiffing it right past your setup. You know, you've already heard him gobble on the limb. He's getting ready to fly down. You're just, and here comes some jackleg with his light on, beating it in there too late. I'm like, dude, what are you doing? And, you know, I've confronted people like that. I've said, hey, man. I just get up and walk to him and say, dude, I'm already here. I got a turkey. I'm working. Can you go somewhere else? You know, and I do it in a very polite way. Oh, I didn't know where you were. So, you know, and almost every time they've done that. Here's a funny thing. On my private land, a few years ago, I had my, at the time, 10-year-old son with me. And we'd already had our pop-up blind set up. But it was raining. So instead of walking to it, we were going to drive about halfway. Driving on my land. Okay, on my land. I want you to hear that. It's not leased. It's owned. On my land. There's two hunters walking up our road. This is right at daylight. And he walks up beside me and says, man, what the heck? Using profanities. I'm not going to do it. You know, what the heck are you doing? I'm like, I think that question needs to go the other way. What are you doing? He said, I'm in here trying to hunt turkeys. I'm trying to get one to gobble. You are driving through here. I said, do you have permission to be here? He said, yeah. I said, well, who gave it to you? And he just sat there. I said, because this is my land, and I didn't give you permission to be here. So we got 2 things can happen here. I can call the game warden, and we can ruin both of our hunts today. Or you can get in your truck that I've already passed up there. You can get in your truck, and you can leave and never step back here again. But I've already got your license tag off your truck, and now I know what you look like. This was before camera phones. You just need to leave. And he flew off at me, and he was trespassing on my property, opening day of turkey season.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, I do think that you should always take the high road and you should be polite and courteous. But I also found that, sometimes people are lost. Sometimes they're confused. They really are. I mean, it does mm-hmm. happen a lot. People, woodsmanship and orientation has been gone for a long time, Heath. So yes. A lot of times when you run into somebody, especially up here in the mountains where I live in South Carolina, we're all walking either hiking trails or old logging roads to get to where you want to go. And when you're getting there in the dark, you meant to turn left and you end up passing that without seeing it. And you're trying to find it and you got to wait for it to get daylight. And they just, I'm sorry, I don't mean to mess you up. I'm trying to find this area. Oh, that's the back down over there. So be helpful and courteous. But that's that old saying, though. Treat people like you want to be treated.
Yeah.
If you're there first, you don't want to be interrupted. So if they're there first, don't interrupt them.
Yeah. And that was, I mean, that's a prime example. Last turkey season, I hate hunting National Forest more and more because of the accidents that happen. Like you said, you're on the ground. There's no orange. Some people are oblivious to whether it's an actual hen calling or a person. But I went to 3 of my favorite spots, and at all 3 spots, the first spot I went to, there was 5 vehicles, 5. And I'm like, do they know where each other's at? So I went to another spot, and it was a vehicle, so I drove on. Went to the last spot. I didn't even hunt that day. Because yeah. Every spot that I went was taken up. But back to what we were talking about is, it's being showing a little bit of respect. it's being courteous and treating others like you want to be treated. We're, like I said, nobody owns public land. We all pay for it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't own a leaf on none of those trees. And I've got to, even though I may be aggravated or frustrated at times, I just got to go on and do something else. And there have been several times that I have passed up the spots that I normally hunt and went to a place that I never hunt and been very successful.
Yeah.
It seems like it pays forward.
One thing that I've been running into more since COVID is hikers. Mm-hmm. Not other hunters, but people who are, case in point, last year I went to one of my favorite turkey spots on public land here in the upstate of South Carolina. Got there early because it's about an hour and a half walk to get to where I want to be, mostly uphill. You know how the mountains are.
And uphill both walking ways.
Walking old logging roads. Yeah, and I finally get up there, and I sit down. I always hear two or three turkeys in there. Just got to figure out where to go. It's a big chunk of national forest land. And I didn't hear anything. You know, sometimes turkeys just don't gobble, right? So I work a little bit when probably to about 10 o'clock. And I start going back down the mountain, and I pass 11 women hiking.
Oh.
Yeah. On the road, not on the trail, on the logging road. And I get down to my truck, and there's six Subaru Outbacks where they all met. Yeah. And I just thought it was funny. It was all the same car. That's I just thought that was funny.
Yeah.
So, and I was actually thinking about it. Should I put a sign in my thing saying there's a hunter here so that they know there's somebody with a gun? Mm. Not that I'm obviously not going to hurt them, but
right.
It may change the direction that they're going or their approach, or maybe they were there to disturb turkey hunters. I don't know. I just said, hello, ladies. How are you? Because they were single file. And they didn't. They just said good morning and just kept on their little walk. And it was... I'm finding more that I'm running into people that are hiking or sightseeing as much as I'm walking into other hunters, because in South Carolina, public land is public land.
Right.
They can use it for anything.
Same,
So I just think, you know, it's just shared. You know, you find a lot more accommodations when I hunt out west public land. I was elk hunting in Colorado a few years ago, and I went to this little spot. There was a guy sitting there, and I walked up. I said, hey, how you doing? And we just introduced ourselves. And he said, I've been seeing elk down here every morning, but I hadn't seen them today, but they've been here the last five mornings. And that's great. I hope you get them. He said, well, I got to go home tomorrow. So if you want to, you know, this is a good spot. And I said, well, man, I don't want to. Or he had to go home in 2 days. I said, well, why don't you come back here tomorrow? You know, and he was like, man, if you beat me here, it's public land. Go kill him. I said, I'm not going to beat you here because you found the spot first and you've been here for 5 days. I'm not going to take your spot. I did go back after that, and I didn't see any elk. I did see some really nice mule deer. But it seems out there people are more used to it because it's bigger blocks.
You can get away.
The public land in the West can swallow up people pretty fast.
Yeah.
You know, you can really spread out. Here in the upstate of South Carolina, it's a bunch of little blocks, you know, and so it can be a little crowded.
But, yeah.
But, you know, I think when you encounter people is to try to take the high road. Remember that they're armed. You don't know what kind of attitude they're in. So be polite, be courteous, and if in doubt, back out would be my suggestion.
Yeah.
It's just not worth it, in my opinion. Yeah, it's not worth getting into a fight over a turkey or a deer or whatever. Just go somewhere else.
Right. Yep. No, it seems like that the confrontations kind of go in spurts, you know, several years without them, and then you'll have a year where it's one or two, and, you know, and we're talking about national forest for us in Virginia, public land like what you're saying. But yeah, just be courteous and try to, you know, like I said, one of our podcast, Calvin Redhouse, was like, you know, you may beat me here today, but tomorrow I'm going to be in here earlier for us.
Oh, there's, I can tell you, opening day at my number one spot up here, I will probably be parked at 3:30 in the morning.
Yep. Yeah.
And I may take me a nap in my truck, but my truck's going to be there first.
Yeah.
And I may even, I've done this a lot too, Heath, where I just go ahead and walk into my spot because I like to use turkey chairs. Mm-hmm. I walk into my spot, I sit down, and I just take a nap until the turkeys wake me up.
That's right.
You know,
perfect.
I do.
Yeah,
I do. But I'm going to be there for, I will probably be parked at 3:30
in the morning. So Pete, with the last 5 or 10 minutes, let's just talk about, you know, the Christian part of your podcast and your faith. And, you know, I know we talked about mine last time. Let's roll it over to yours this time.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, as I said earlier, when I did Christian Outdoors, the two things I'm most passionate about is the outdoors and my faith in Christ. And it's something that I just love to talk about and enjoy sharing. We could do this for hours as well, but, when I started Christian Outdoors, it started with the enjoying God every day. Is you'll see that under on my logo under that it says enjoying God every day, and that came from being a theologian somewhat. I like to read theology, and I was reading the Westminster Shorter Catechism, which was written by the Presbyterian Church in 1620s, and it's a way to teach people about God, Christ, the Church, everything else, and question one in that is, what's the chief end of mankind? Which in today's language is, what's the meaning of life? Why are we here? What's the purpose of humanity? And the answer is, the chief end of mankind is to glorify God and to enjoy Him forever. And when I read that, Heath, it dawned on me, and to enjoy Him forever. And I thought, does that mean after we die and we get in heaven, then we can enjoy God? Or should we be enjoying God now? And I realized that I think it means we should start now enjoying God. And I said, well, how? And so it started me on a journey of trying to enjoy God every single day, like intentionally, not just acknowledging God, not just seeing his beautiful creation, not just enjoying the sunrise or the sunset or enjoying the beautiful flowers or, you know, not what he does, but enjoying him in an intimate, personal way. And so I started on this process of beginning every day. It started in 2014. Asked myself, Pete, how are you going to enjoy God today? And granted, there's some days it's harder because there's a lot going on. Or you're going to a funeral. You're going to, you know, these things are happening. So how do we do that? And so that is one of the driving things behind my podcast, is to encourage the listeners to build relationship with God and to intentionally try to enjoy Him every day. And so out of this came my book, called Do You Enjoy God? 12 Steps to Enjoying God Every Day. And it's a step-by-step process, not in order necessarily. Step one is the most important. You can't enjoy God without a relationship. You got to have a relationship with Him if you're going to enjoy Him. It's just like your children, your friends, your spouse, whatever. You can't really enjoy them in their fullest unless you have an intimate relationship with them and understand who they are. So it starts with that, but and we talk about a lot of different things in that book, like discovering your gifts. You know, what did God bless me with, and how can I use them? What does it mean to be made in the image of God? And a lot of different topics. But it's important to me that I try to convey in my podcast and in my speaking events that you are worthy of God's love. Well, let me rephrase that. None of us are worthy of everything He's done for us. But in God's eyes, God sees you as worth something, that He sent His Son down so that to give you hope and to give you everlasting life. And by accepting relationship with Jesus Christ, then your life can be more valuable and more, what's the word I'm looking for? It can just be more full. It can be more full. And it's like I've said many times, you know, when we talk about this relationship with God, I think for most believers, and even those that are on the fringe, they acknowledge God. A lot of people may not have a relationship with Christ, but they acknowledge a higher being, right? Mm-hmm. So they acknowledge God. They recognize what God's done. They see some of the good that God does in the world. They tolerate God from time to time, but do they enjoy Him? And do they enjoy Him in an intimate way? And that's something that's important to me, that I encourage people to try to enjoy God and the blessings that He gives us, and to recognize all of them. Every day is a gift. Every single day that we wake up is a gift. And how can I use that to benefit those around me, to make their day better, to make their life better, because I have seen this, Heath. When I focus more on enjoying God, my troubles seem small. When I'm intentional about being a blessing to other people, then what I'm going through is irrelevant, because my focus is not on me, it's on you, it's on them, it's on him. And when I can do that, then it makes my life so much better. So, you know, all of us can improve our relationship with Christ. I fell short every day. Paul tells us in the book of Romans that I am the, as Paul says, I'm the worst sinner of all. I fall short all the time, and I do. And I pray for God's forgiveness and for God's grace to cover that. But the good thing is, the good news is that I don't care what you've done. It's not bad enough. I don't care where you are. There's always a way home. That everything that Christ has done, he has done it for you, and that he wants you to have that relationship with him. He wants you to have the assurance that that you can spend eternity with him and that you can enjoy him now, even before then.
Yeah. I would say that most people probably don't, well, I'm not going to say most because I don't think that's a fair analogy, but every day's a blessing. Mm-hmm. You know, I've got some close friends that have got cancer, mm-hmm. that, you know, scares us to death, family member, and, you know, every day is a blessing, and we should mm-hmm. treat it that way. Mm-hmm. So
absolutely. And, you know, when I do this a lot of times, and then people will say things like, well, then why does this happen? Why our children get sick? Why do people that we love have cancer and die? Why do only the good die young? And, you know, I say to them first about that last part, why do only the good die young, is that, well, the bad people die young too. We just don't care. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
It just feels like that only the good ones die young because we love them and care about them. But the people we don't care about, we don't care when they die. And that's a horrible thing to say, but I think I'm just being blunt and honest with it, mm-hmm. right? But we live in a sinful world, right? I mean, we are bent to sinning. There's that old hymn, Lord, forgive my bent to sinning. We are inclined to do things wrong. John Calvin said, one of the greatest theologians of all time, said, I sin because I enjoy it. And the more I enjoy it, the more I sin. And the more I sin, the more I enjoy it. And that's why we have to resist the temptation. You know, Paul tells us, don't let the devil get a foothold in your life. That we have to fight against all that temptation to do exactly what God does not want for us. But if we can focus on him, then all those things, they really do. And I'm not trying to you know, sell elixir here. I'm being honest. I have lived through this. I have gone through some really dark times in my life. My wife and I lost a child when he was 3 months old. I've gone through some really dark times in my life and some very difficult times. But what I've seen is that when I focus on God, I know that he is there with me. When I put my trust in him, I see that he is the reason that I am where I am. As one person said one day, he said, Pete, when you're going through it, it's hard to see where God is. Mm-hmm. But it's easy to look back and see where God was. And there's so much truth in that, is that we overcome so much more than we think we can. I mean, I've been homeless. I've been unemployed. I've had children die. I've had, you know, parents die way too young. I've had a lot of crap happen to me, just like most people out there, right? Just because I believe in Christ and put my full trust in him doesn't mean that I'm exempt from heartache, because that is far from true. Mm-hmm. But what I am exempt from is having to deal with it alone. What I am exempt from is the suffering and the intense pain, knowing that there's someone there who is crying with me and loving me and helping me get through it and assuring me that better days are ahead. And the blessings of God just continue to, I'm blown away every day, Heath, when I see more and more of what God is doing. As we said in the beginning, I started this podcast in 2019 with absolutely no clue. I didn't know if I was going to have one listener or 10, right? Mm-hmm. And we muddled along and kept doing it and kept being faithful and kept trusting and kept being faithful. And God started blessing it. He started blessing that. And we're going to hit 1 million subscribers next month. Think about that. Mm-hmm. That's overwhelming to Pete, by the way.
Right? Yeah.
That's very overwhelming to think that I have to make sure that, I'm accurate and precise, and that I share the good news in a way that can invite people into relationship. But that doesn't mean that there's a million listeners every week.
Right.
But it means that, at least a million people have heard what we're saying, and that there and that number, once it hits a certain level, you'll see this with yours, once it just starts exploding in growth.
Mm-hmm.
Exploding. This time last year we had 200,000.
Nice.
So we've added 867,000 people in a year.
That's phenomenal.
And it's just, yeah, it is. It blows my mind, but it just shows the bigness of God and yep. and how He is continuing to bless it.
Yeah. Well, Pete.
One more thing.
Yep.
Before I go.
Yep.
March 4th and 5th, if you're going to be at the Dixie Deer Classic in Raleigh, North Carolina, uh-huh. I'm speaking at Red Oak Baptist Church, which is right outside Raleigh, March 4th at their Wild Game Banquet, and I'm also speaking Sunday morning at their church. So if you're in the area of Raleigh, North Carolina, March 4th and 5th, come out to Red Oak Baptist Church. I'd love to meet you, shake your hand, and get a chance to talk with you. And I'll be speaking there on Saturday night at their Wild Game Banquet and Sunday morning.
Yeah, stop by and see Pete. Well, Pete, like I said, I appreciate you coming on and telling us a little bit about your journey. You know, that's what our podcast is called, The Journey. And you know, this comes to full circle that, you know, we're all in this together. No matter what you do, hunting-wise, what game species you pursue, that we're all in it together. We all have a passion for what we do. And, you know, I'll kind of take that verse, you know, do unto others as other you want others to do unto you. And, mm-hmm. like, I have to do better at that myself. That's something that I have to work on. But I'm blessed that we have crossed paths and, you know, been able to talk and, run into each other. And I feel like that's going to continue.
Yeah. Hope so.
Yeah.
Hope so.
You're going to come up and bear hunt and now you're going to musky
fish.
You gotta
remind me, man. Cause you know how it is fall season. I mean, I'm in the road a lot. If I don't get drawn for my antelope tag, I'll be in Wisconsin chasing grouse in October, and then in November I'm usually either in Kentucky or here in South Carolina or Tennessee hunting. And but yeah, I think you said it's December.
Yep, December, and you can muskie fish after turkey season. So we're
send me the dates of when your bear season is, and I'll go ahead and put it in my calendar so I don't cross it up.
I'll do it.
All right.
But guys, if you enjoy what you're listening to and you want to hear more of our podcast, you know, do us a favor, listen to it, send it to a friend, pass it on, and get them learning or listening to stuff that they're passionate about. Like I said, especially us here at Houndsman XP, we want you to pay it forward or pass it forward, and I'm sure Pete feels the same way. So, Pete,
absolutely.
With the end of every podcast, we thank you for helping us teach, train, or learn. Thank you for helping us learn about your journey and what you're passionate about.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for having me, man.
Absolutely.